सर्वज्ञे वसुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय From Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 29, Krishna and the Gopis Meet, Text Number 38. Tanna Pasida Vijina Danate Nigri Malam. Rapta Vishuja Vasatis Tadupasamasa
Rapta Vishuja Vasatis Tadupasamasa
Ratsundara Smita Nirikshanati Rakama
Ratsundara Smita Nirikshanati Rakama
Taptamanam Pudadushan Dehidasam
To us,
Pasida,
please show your mercy.
Brijina,
of
all distress,
Adana,
O vanquisher,
Te,
your
Angri
Mulam. Feet. Raptaha,
we have approached.
Visraja,
renouncing.
Vasati, our homes.
Pratupasana,
the worship of you.
Asyaha,
hoping for. Pat,
your.
Sundara,
beautiful.
Smita,
smiling,
Nirikshana,
because of the glances,
Tibra,
intense,
Kama,
by the lust,
Tata,
burned,
Atmanam,
his hearts,
Purusha,
of all men,
Bhushana,
our
ornaments,
Dehi,
please grant
Dasham
servitude.
Translation.
Therefore, O vanquisher of all distress, please show us mercy. To approach your lotus feet, we abandon our families and homes, and we have no desire other than to serve you. Our hearts are burning with intense desires generated by your beautiful smiling glances. O jewel among men, please make us your maidservants. Translation responsibly. Therefore, O vanquisher of all distress,
please show us mercy.
To approach your lotus feet, we abandon our families and homes. And we have no desire other than to serve you. Our hearts are burning with intense desires generated by your beautiful smiling glances. A jewel among men.
Please make us your maidservants.
Purport. When Sri Krishna was born, the great sage Garga predicted that he would manifest all the opulences of the Supreme Lord Narayan. The gopis now appeal to the Lord to fulfill this prediction by being merciful and granting them direct service, just as Lord Narayan awards direct service to his loving devotees. The goat is emphasized that they did not give up their families and homes with the hope of securing a higher pleasure from Krishna. They are simply begging for service, revealing their pure-hearted devotion. The gopis think, if in the course of your pursuing your happiness, we somehow or other become happy by seeing your face, what is the harm in that? Srila Vishvanatha Chakravarti Thakur comments on the words Purusha Bhushana, a jewel among men. The Thakur states that the gopis meant to say, a jewel of all males, please decorate our golden bodies with the dark blue gems of your limbs. So, as stated here by Srila Hridayananda Maharaj, Garga Muni, he predicted that Lord Krishna would actually manifest all the opulences of the Supreme Lord Narayan. So, of course, Lord Krishna is the origin of Lord Narayan, but Garga Muni, not wanting to present, not wanting to dampen the natural, spontaneous, loving mood of the residents of Vrindavan, he's not exactly wanting to bring in the aspect of God with Krishna, because the residents of Vrindavan love Krishna not because he is God, but because he is Krishna, all attractive, the jewel among, you know, all men, the most wonderful personality. So Garga Muni, in a sense, he is hinting that he is Narayan, but without saying so much, and he is saying that he will manifest all the opulences of Lord Sri Narayan. So the gopis understood this very well. Any statement made about Krishna would not be unnoticed by the gopis in Vrindavan. If there was any statement, and they would, it would come to their attention, because everywhere they are going, they're searching for information of Krishna, and they would seize upon the slightest connection that there may be some connection here with Krishna. Like this. So they very well understood the instructions of Garga Muni. So in this verse, they are actually praying, as it's nicely stated here, that they appeal to the Lord to fulfill this prediction by being merciful and granting them direct service, just as Lord Narayan awards direct service to his loving devotees. So, here, the gopis, they are presenting that to approach your lotus feet, we have abandoned our families and our homes, and we have no desire other than to serve you. So this is the mood that the gopis are approaching Lord Krishna. They're approaching him that we have no desire for any material enjoyment whatsoever. In our approaching you, we are approaching you simply out of a loving desire to serve you. There is no material cause or reason why we are approaching you. But they are not just saying that. They are not just presenting, some lip service to Krishna, in God we trust. we love Krishna, but at the same time, we love the soccer and we love this and we love that. You know, it's not that sort of love. The gopis have, you know, given up everything. They have abandoned their homes, their families. They abandon the very, that identity. There's not even a trace of that they are any longer identifying with their homes or their families. They have even abandoned even the most subtle traces of any connection with anything else other than Krishna. So, this is the mood that the gopis approach Krishna. It is and what are they asking? They are taking full shelter of Krishna without any duplicity, giving up all material attachment, giving up all other shelters and taking full shelter of Krishna and praying to him, may we become your servants. That is how the gopis approach Krishna. So, in the Krishna book, Srila Prabhupada quotes this in a similar way, saying the gopis, addressing Krishna, and he is well known as Lord Hari, or one who takes away all the miseries from those devotees who have taken full shelter of him. So that is actually the nature of the Lord, that when one takes full shelter of the Lord, then he gives full protection. And that full protection means that he takes away all the miseries of material existence. Without that taking full shelter and that full surrender, then that same protection is not there. That same shelter is not there. So, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Sukadeva Goswami, all the Acharyas, are showing us how to actually approach the Lord, especially Krishna. And this particular aspect of being free from all material conceptions of I am, you know, this body, I am the enjoyer of this, and all these things that in relationship with me for my enjoyment, I am mine. one has to be completely free from all these conceptions. In that mood of approaching Krishna, the devotee gets the shelter of Krishna. So, now, there are many persons, though, who they feel that they can just skip that part and just approach Krishna on the level of conjugal rasa. That this is the point I'm getting to. In it's happening here in the West, of course, because that sort of mentality is being imported from bogus gurus from India and what have you. But in India, there, you know, the hearing of the Srimad Bhagavatam and these pastimes of Krishna is prevalent. You know, I was discussing with one family of Indians on Friday night, and they were telling how in his village there were no deities of Vishnu, although sort of the roots of their religion sort of were with Sankaracharya, and you know, one of their predominating deities was Balaji, who's a deity of Vishnu. But he wasn't in their village. But in their village, all the deities were deities of Lord Shiva. And, you know, the people would, you know, daily, every day, as he was growing up, all the people in the village, they would go and worship the deities of Lord Shiva and various other demigods. They would, you know, there would be some kirtan. They would hear some Srimad Bhagavatam. They would perform various religious rituals and what have you. And they would do this on a regular basis. But that sort of approaching Krishna by that method does not give one shelter at Krishna's lotus feet. Because in effect, what they are doing without realizing is they are committing many different offenses in their devotional activities. The eighth offense for a Vaishnava who takes up the process of bhakti yoga, chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, is to consider the chanting of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra to be equal to various fruitive activities which are offered in the Karma Kanda section of the Vedas. Right? Now generally what that means is that this bhakti, Bhagavan, bhakti and the bhakta, they don't belong to the material world, they belong in the spiritual world. They have nothing to do with material things. So, bhakti is a completely spiritual activity. Chanting the holy name of the Lord is a spiritual activity which descends from Goloka Vrindavan. Krishna's holy name, which is non-different from him, Krishna appears in this world in the form of his holy name. It is not a material sound vibration. It is non-different from Krishna. It is a completely spiritual activity. And Bhakti Devi, who empowers us to take up the chanting of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, is one of the spiritual shaktis or energies of the Supreme Lord. Again, one cannot take to Krishna consciousness chanting the holy name of the Lord due to any material qualification. One gets shelter under the spiritual energy which allows one to take up the chanting the holy names of the Lord. So in the Vedic literatures, and not just the Vedic literatures, but there are many other religious types of ceremonies and rituals throughout the world, many of them are material rituals, activities, which help people who are completely materially engrossed to gradually reach a spiritual platform, to become purified. Attaining the spiritual platform, those material activities are then given up. And then one takes up the transcendental activities of bhakti, chanting the holy names of the Lord, serving the Lord. Generally when one performs various material karma kanda type ritualistic religious ceremonies, they're material in the sense that the performer quite often is hoping to get some material reward, and therefore that renders the whole process material. Sometimes those same activities, when they're performed but with a spiritual, ultimate motive, they regain this, a partial spiritual quality, which is very beneficial. Otherwise, those processes can become completely mundane because they're after a material result. So, if someone says that worshipping of Lord Shiva, or if one worships, does any of the various different types of religious rituals, and equates that with the spiritual activity of chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, that person is committing a grave offence. See? Because they're taking something material, taking something secondary, and saying, this is the same as, and you'll get the same result, as chanting Hare Krishna, or chanting the names of the Lord, which is a completely spiritual activity. Underlying this eighth offence is very similar to the second offence, whereby one considers various demigods to be equal to Lord Vishnu. So, you can think, I will chant, you know, I will offer worship to Lord Shiva and do various prayers to Lord Shiva. And that is the same, and if sometimes I will worship Lord Vishnu and do various prayers to Vishnu, or Krishna, hear some Srimad Bhagavatam, and I'll just get the same result because, you know, ultimately it is all one. See, it's that sort of equating everything as being on the same platform and not seeing the various differences. But factually, Krishna exists in the spiritual world, and from him, by his spiritual potencies, all the spiritual worlds are manifest. And by his spiritual potency, all the material worlds are manifest, and within each of those material worlds, there are various demigods to manage that little, tiny, insignificant little material universe. They're unlimited little, you know, so to equate those demigods in some, you know, little universe amongst many, 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 you know, unlimited universes in the material world as being equal to the Supreme Lord, who exists far beyond the material creation, before and after the material creation, far beyond the spiritual sky with all the Vaikuntha planets, is a total miscalculation, a great offence. Just like, you know, in any establishment, you know, if we walk into Parliament and, you know, the Prime Minister is there, and we say, you know, there is no difference between you, you're a human, the person out there cleaning the toilets, he's also a human, you're both on the same level, I cannot see any other difference. That is a great offence to the Prime Minister, because he is obviously in a far, you know, his responsibility, his position is far, far, you know, more advanced, superior. So that distinction must be there. So it is an offence. So sometimes people with this sort of mentality, they engage in hearing these various pastimes, but they have no understanding, they have no qualification to speak them, and they have no qualification to hear them, and therefore even though they hear these pastimes of Rasa Leela, they make practically no benefit. Because of their mentality, their lack of faith, and their lack of, you know, there's no faith when they're hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. They may have all sorts of other understandings, that he is, you know, another exalted person within the universe, like Shiva, Brahma, this one, that one. You know, and there's some piety I will gain from, you know, coming into contact with him, and from that piety I will gain some, you know, pious results. So they do gather some pious results. There is some, you know, piety gained there for the innocent masses, but for those who are actually, you know, teaching, propagating mistruths about Krishna and his pastimes, for them it is grave offences are being committed, and those people are plummeted. They're not purified, they're actually plummeted into, you know, deeper and deeper into the grips of material illusion and entanglement, even though they're speaking, you know, Rasa Leela pastimes. One of the other offences in the you know, chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, the ninth offence, of course, is that one should not instruct the glories of the holy name of the Lord to the faithless. So if we think about that for a minute, that the, in understanding the Supreme Lord, when we approach the Absolute Truth, God, our first realization is of his holy name. If we can become purified to the point where we can understand his holy name is spiritual, when I chant the holy name, I become purified because it is a spiritual vibration, it is non-different from God. That qualification will allow us to then understand something about the form of the Lord. But we cannot actually understand the form of the Lord without that purification. As soon as you mention to someone without that purification that the Supreme Lord exists in a two-armed form, plays a flute, wanders around barefoot and, you know, in Vrindavan, or even if you mention, you know, even the Narayan forms with four arms, they cannot even conceive of that, what to speak of Krishna. Without that previous purification, they cannot understand the form of the Lord. If one cannot understand the form of the Lord, how can one understand the qualities of that transcendental form? Just like here, Lord, as Prabhupada describes, Krishna is sometimes called Hari, the one who takes away. But another way of saying that is one who is a thief. Krishna actually steals away all our suffering. But he steals everything. He does. Krishna, he takes everything of everybody, always. He's a thief. He's a bat. But, you know, generally if you call someone a thief, you're thinking they're immoral. And actually many people, you know, when they compare Krishna with other demigods or with Vishnu or with Ram, they think, well, I think Ram is more superior because Krishna is sometimes a thief. He's got some pretty good qualities, but some of them that just go off, you know. But Krishna being a thief, is there's nothing wrong with that, because of course everything will be taken by Krishna because it is his. It naturally belongs to him and it always goes back to him. We're the thieves. We keep taking his property and it keeps going back to him. We say, you thief. That's, see? So, but, you know, we cannot understand Krishna's qualities if we cannot understand his form. If we cannot understand his qualities, how is it possible to understand his activities? And if we cannot understand his activities, how can we understand the greatest mysterious of activities, of those activities of Krishna with the gopis and the Rasa Leela? So therefore it's a great offence to, you know, preach the glories of the holy name to the faithless, what to speak of successive realisations. That is there within that offence. Not stated, but should be understood. So, you know, these people who, you know, they're professional reciters of the Srimad Bhagavatam. And in order to attract big crowds, which means more money, more prestige, more fame, they go straight to Rasa Leela. They are not qualified to speak because they do not understand. And the audience are not qualified to hear as well because they're going there for some other reason as well. So, you know, there is many offences being committed, and that sort of hearing of the pastimes of, you know, Krishna and the gopis will not actually yield the effect. There will be no spiritual advancement. And therefore, what is the result? That they hear the Srimad Bhagavatam from these people. As soon as it's finished, back to the home and straight into the same, you know, materialistic way of life. A little bit of piety gain, no doubt. As far as, you know, increasing their spiritual understanding, practically nil. And some, because of the offences that are involved here, are literally thrown off. They're actually, because of the offences involved in such activities, they're literally barred from the path of bhakti. So, generally, you know, people have this misconception, you know, about Krishna's Rasa Leela pastimes because they're not hearing from qualified people. Now, what to speak of presenting, you know, Rasa Leela? In the Srimad Bhagavatam, Lord Kapila, when he, after speaking to Devahuti, he's speaking Sankhya philosophy. He's discussing the relationship between the Supreme Lord and his various general material energies, There is, you know, he touches on bhakti yoga, and he also describes the entanglement of the living entity in that material energy. So, you know, very beginning instructions, how the living entity is completely entangled in the material energy, and how that material energy is operating, originally coming from the Supreme Lord and then expanding in various ways. Lord Kapila says even that information should not be instructed to one who is materially attached, to one who is not a devotee, to one who is greedy, to one who is attached to their possessions, to their, you know, material family members. Even that instruction at the end, he says, don't speak that to those type of people. Even that, what to speak of, you know, Krishna's Rasa Lila pastimes. He says, but who can hear this? Someone can hear it if they're a devotee. Someone can hear it if they're non-envious of God, if they're non-envious of God's devotees, if they are, you know, detached from the material world or seeking that sort of detachment. Who is qualified to speak it? It must be heard by a bona fide guru. And who is qualified to hear it? Actually, they must be, you know, someone who has proper respect for the guru. So without those qualifications, even Sankhya philosophy of Lord Kapila cannot be heard. Because if it is heard without those qualifications, it does not take effect. But not only does it not take effect, but rascals take that knowledge and they misuse it. And that's what's happening around the world now. That people are hearing, you know, these pastimes of Lord Krishna, and they're taking it and misusing it. How are they misusing it? They're misusing it saying, here is Krishna, and you see his, you know, sexual activities with the gopis, therefore here is spiritual backing from the shastras for all our sexual activities in the material world. We have sanction for our sinful activities. That is how it is being misused. Not only do we have sanction, but some of them use it as a leverage for, you know, increasing their opportunities for sex in the material world. So even in astrology, I do a little astrology, in the astrology book which is written by Parasara Muni, in one section he describes that even this astrology, which is, you know, a mundane science, he says this should not be instructed to one who is not well known to the teacher, to a rascal, someone who has no control over their senses, someone who's a, you know, dishonest, someone who's not a devotee, someone who has no faith in the Supreme Lord. Even astrology, according to Parasara Muni, who's the father of Vyasadeva, should not be instructed to such a person. What will they do? What do they do? They take, if you instruct someone in astrology, what will they do? They use it to increase their sense gratification, the sense gratification of others. I used to do these psychic fairs with, I used to do astrology, and there were all these clairvoyants and you know, what have you, and I was disgusted. I was disgusted, and I actually took some of my friends to those places, and they went away disgusted. You know, men claiming to be, you know, clairvoyant, but just looking for an opportunity to touch a woman. And I see, I touch, you know. And I remember there's one clairvoyant, you know, he had this sort of routine. I see you sitting in a bath, you know, and he just went on, you know. It was just, I don't know, it was just an opportunity for sense gratification, just see if there was some, you know, some angle he can get in there. Not like that. And people do that with astrology, you know. How's my love life looking? Right. Does anyone ask the question, you know, what is the purpose of astrology? Does anyone even ask that question? What is the purpose of astrology? Actually, when I took up astrology when I was about 15, I took it up because I asked one question. I was reading the newspaper and I was looking at astrology and I thought, you know, if this works, it means that there's God. Because that means that someone is so powerful and so intelligent that they can understand the movements of all living entities. They have control over their movements. And they can actually, using the sky as their piece of paper and the stars as their pencils, they can write a message which we can read about that. And that proves the existence of God. So astrology is literally, all sciences, not just astrology, but all sciences are actually there literally just to prove the existence of God, and they have no other purpose. So, you know, giving this knowledge to rascals, not only do people misuse it, but if it is presented in an improper way, it encourages the sense gratification in the name of spiritual life. And therefore, and people also, you know, will discuss these things in a very offensive way without realizing what they are doing. So, you know, it is like throwing pearls before swine, basically. You know, if you throw pearls before swine, you think they'll come up and say, oh, you know, oh, look at these wonderful gems. No. They'll eat them just like it's some swill. People should be very careful. And because of many different offences and not hearing through the right channels and therefore not hearing properly, if one doesn't hear through the right channels, then one cannot get the message. See, the message here is very loud and clear. The gopis are showing the example. If you want to approach God, you have to approach Him free from all material contamination and with one desire only, to serve Him. And that desire should be completely spotlessly pure. That is the message of the gopis. But if you hear from anyone else without hearing from, you know, a bona fide guru like Srila Prabhupada, you will completely miss that. It will not be spoken. And even if it is spoken under someone's breath, they'll be emphasising, you know, some other aspect which is encouraging all sorts of sense gratification. So this is the beginning of understanding these pastimes. We have no hope of tasting these pastimes. How can we taste the pure love of the gopis, who are completely free from all material contamination, if our consciousness is immersed in just enjoying material sense gratification? Then we haven't even got to the preliminary mood of the gopis. Right? How can we taste these pastimes of Radha Krishna, Krishna the gopis, when we cannot even enter into the very beginning mood, that, you know, preliminary, that first get beyond material conception, get beyond material attachment, then look at, you know, tasting pure devotional service to the Supreme Lord. If our minds are completely absorbed in just enjoying the material world, we can never taste these pastimes, we can never enter into them, and we can read these books and hear them, you know, until the cows come home, but we will not, you know, taste them. It'll be like licking the outside of a jar of honey. So, you know, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he has actually therefore given us the method of purification, and he has given us a method that if we chant the holy names of the Lord, it purifies the heart, it cleanses the dust, all that material contamination from the heart, from the mirror of the mind. Instead of, you know, when we look at ourselves, because the mirror is covered with material contamination, the dust of contamination, we don't see our spiritual form. when we see ourselves in the mirror of the mind, we think, I am this man, I am this woman, I'm about so high, such and such a weight, I am Australian, I am Indian, I am this, I am... Well, that's what we see. We just see all the dust. A chanting Hare Krishna, it actually cleanses all that dust from the mirror of the mind, and one sees the pure self. Until one comes to the platform of understanding that they are a spirit soul, there is no question of tasting spiritual emotions. See? There's no question of being absorbed in material contamination with no understanding one's spiritual identity and thinking, I am absorbed in spiritual emotions in Rasa Lila. There's no question of spiritual emotions because you haven't, you don't even know you're a spiritual person. You know, the consciousness, you think you're a material person. All your emotions are material. You have to get beyond the material contamination, realize your spiritual identity, then that's the beginning that yes, now I can begin to experience spiritual emotions. And those spiritual emotions, you know, they culminate in these very mysterious activities of Krishna with the gopis. So here in this verse they say, O vanquisher of all distress, please show us your mercy. To approach your lotus feet, we abandon our families and our homes, and we have no desire other than to serve you. Our hearts are burning with intense desires generated by your beautiful smiling glances. O jewel among men, please make us your maidservants. So the gopis are asking Krishna to be his maidservants. As stated here, this very nice sentence, it says, the gopis think, if in the course of pursuing your happiness, we somehow or other become happy by seeing your face, what is the harm in that? So, the gopis, as it's described here, their hearts are burning with intense desires generated by Krishna's beautiful smiling glances. Now, that is generally interpreted that their hearts are filled with all these lusty desires, you know, for Krishna. That's how it would usually be read. But that's not the meaning of that. Yes, their hearts are burning with these intense spiritual lusty desires generated by looking at Krishna's beautiful face. But their desire is some, you know, we want to please you. Our hearts are burning with these, you know, desires to please you for your satisfaction. And they're saying, if in pursuing, you know, your satisfaction, and we see you, we look at your face and we see you just completely ecstatic because of our devotional service, what is the harm if we become a little happy with that? You know, there's no harm in that. They're prepared to go to hell to serve Krishna. But if somehow or another a little joy comes their way, what is the harm in that? But they're not just, you know, seeking. And it's that sort of mood that we initially learn through the via media of the spiritual master. That, you know, we see in the example of Srila Prabhupada. That Srila Prabhupada was prepared to go to hell, you know, which he did, he went to New York, to, you know, please his spiritual master. And, you know, the immense satisfaction that Srila Prabhupada got knowing that his spiritual master was happy every time a book went out, every time a temple was opened, every time a devotee was made. You know, something was just unheard of, you know, Krishna consciousness spreading all over the world. The pleasure that came Prabhupada's way, what is the harm in that? You know, he was just trying to serve his spiritual master. So that is the same mood. That is the mood that we actually learn this mood from the gopis by serving our spiritual master. Then we can understand the relationship between the gopis and Krishna by serving Guru. Sometimes people think, you know, the spiritual master is giving me something too difficult, but I am more qualified to hear Rasa Leela. I'll leave the shelter of my spiritual master, I'll leave Prabhupada's shelter, but here, you know, somewhere else, they're offering, you know, Rasa Leela, you know, pastimes without this, you know, difficulty of opening temples and working hard and, you know, cleaning the toilets and, you know, washing the temple room floors and doing all this hard work. We can just, you know, skip Prabhupada and we'll just go, because I'm so qualified, Prabhupada didn't give us enough, you know. Someone else is offering more. Such people, they cannot even understand Lord Kapila's instructions on Sankhya philosophy. What to speak of these pastimes, you know, with the gopis. It's not possible. It's not possible. So, they are saying that, now the gopis, they know that Krishna is famous as a woman hunter. Again, it should not be confused with anything, any concept that we have, any material concept that we have about that. We should all just open the door and just throw it straight out, so that we can hear, you know, what it actually means. Krishna actually, you know, previous, the gopis understood that, you know, Krishna stole all their garments because he wanted to satisfy their desire. They wanted Krishna as their husband, and he wanted to satisfy their desire to become their husband. But he also, in doing that, he revealed to them that he does have this desire to enjoy pure transcendental love in the conjugal relationship. It is understood that, you know, Krishna is enjoying love, transcendental love, pure love, with no material contamination, in all varieties of ways. They can see he has many friends. So it is understood Krishna enjoys love with his friends. You know, love is like a plate of prasad, really. You know, there's all different flavours. You know, we say God is love. It's not just like, you know, one lump of mashed potatoes. You know, God is love. He's unlimited and love is unlimited. There's all varieties there. So, you know, Krishna is enjoying, you know, loving relationships with his friends. He's enjoying, you know, with servants, with his mother. And he also revealed to them that he enjoys conjugal relationship. And therefore, they understand that. And therefore, they want to satisfy that aspect of Krishna's, loving propensity. And that's why they are saying that, you know, we will offer you in worship, you know, those lusty desires of ours, in that sense, in that purely spiritual sense, to enjoy that purely spiritual conjugal relationship. And therefore they are saying that, O jewel among men, please make us your maidservants. They are, you know, when Krishna, the jewel among men, when he decorates their bodies with his beautiful limbs, then they will be very happy that he has accepted their purely spiritual worship, like that. So these are some of the aspects of Krishna's pastimes. We've got a few minutes for questions or comments, if anyone has any comments.